This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Michigan League for Public Policy President Gilda Jacobs discusses Governor Rick Snyder's proposed budget, as well as the human cost of infrastructure. But first, West Michigan Republican power broker and school choice advocate Betsy DeVos is now the United States Secretary of Education. We're going to talk about what that could mean for charter schools with Gary Miron. He's a professor in Western Michigan University's Education Leadership Research and Technology Department, and he has extensively studied and written about charter schools. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Gordon.
So give me, first of all, just the overall reaction. Betsy DeVos is now Secretary of Education. What do you think that may mean for charter schools across the country?
Well, I think it's good news for charter schools, and I've heard from a number of people about these large companies that are own and operate charter schools that now have expansion plans. So I think we could see a more rapid expansion of charter schools across the nation.
Now, a lot of people have said, look, the Secretary of Education has limited power, especially when it comes to K-12 education, so don't necessarily look for big changes there. Look more at things like higher ed. Do you think that's the right way to read this?
Well, I think with this administration, we think about a lot of things. We think about how things should happen, how the transition will work. And when we look at the Department of Education, rationally, we know that the Secretary of Education does not have much authority, in part because the amount of money that the Department of Education has isn't that great. And most of it is devoted to special education and to the college loan system. So, on the one hand, rationally speaking, she doesn't have that much authority, but I think we can't expect things to be done rationally. I think we have to expect things to be different or expect the unexpected. So my expectation is that she's going to leverage the authority that she does have to affect wider sweeping change and also to push more the decisions about education to state levels, whether that's special education or civil rights issues and their enforcement, and push that to local or state levels where her and her husband also have a great amount of influence in those political arenas.
The DeVos family is seen as largely responsible for the big growth in charter schools in Michigan because of their advocacy, because of their political contributions to members of the legislature. In the Detroit Free Press, a column from Stephen Henderson written that got a lot of circulation after Betsy DeVos was nominated for Secretary of Education said that in Detroit, parents of school-age children have plenty of choices thanks to the nation's largest urban network of charter schools. What remains in short supply is quality. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a fair assessment, and her thinking, and I think we can expect to see this in her exercise of authority, is she's not a believer in oversight and regulations. She wants to deregulate, have less oversight, allow the accountability that she believes in is market accountability. So with charter schools, if they're not doing well, she has a belief that it's they'll remedy themselves. And
people will stop going there and they will go out of business.
And our evidence suggests just that that's not necessarily the case. And there's anecdotes we can cite, some closures and so forth due to drops in enrollments. But mostly what we see is two struggling systems, and the charter system and the public school system, that are struggling and failing and having, the same amount of money now split between two systems, and both of them struggling and failing. That's what the research evidence is indicating.
Are there other states which have charter school systems and have different levels of accountability which are getting different results?
There are, and when I look at nationally, and we've done a lot of state evaluations of charter school reforms for state education agencies, and a couple of them, like in Delaware and Connecticut, our reforms have suggested that charter schools can work. And what's unique about these states is that they focus on quality rather than quantity. They focus on charter schools as being as improving traditional public schools by example. As it turns out, they end up having fewer charter schools, more selective processes. And those states that tend to have that type of model and that belief behind them tend to have more bipartisan support for those charter school reforms. States like Michigan, Ohio, Arizona are kind of in a different camp, and they are more prevalent today. But these states The thinking behind them has been more partisan in nature, but also the thinking is we can improve public schools through competition. So create as many charter schools as possible. Don't worry about quality. Create the hurt. When the public schools are hurt, then they'll shape up, then they'll respond. I've heard one person even say from the American Enterprise Institute, the problem with charter schools in states like Michigan is that we haven't hurt the public schools enough, that we have to cut to the bone, then they'll finally respond. And that's pretty scary to think this thinking. What we see in the research actually shows what happens in these schools when there's increased competition for limited numbers of students is that the district schools lose the most resource-rich families first. And after they lose between 6% and 7% of their population to schools of choice or charter schools, the public schools tend to go in a negative spiral, that they don't have the economies of scale and the efficiency to actually lift themselves up and compete because they have fixed costs and other things that are involved. But actually, the evidence suggests that cutting to the bone is not going to force the public schools to react positively. It's going to just put them into that negative spiral.
Newsweek noted that the two Republican senators who ended up voting against Betsy DeVos's nomination for Secretary of Education came from Maine and Alaska, which both have large rural areas. Maine is actually considered, according to one estimate, the most rural state in the country. Is that a problem for rural areas, that they do not have the same options for creating charter schools, that when you have areas where there's only perhaps one school, you can't afford to bleed off all the students or half the students from the one school in that town when there may not be another one for several miles?
Yeah, choice as we know it with limited markets where families can choose from different schools, it's not viable in rural areas because the distances are too great and the numbers of students are too small for different competing schools to exist. So we don't see a lot of choice in Alaska and even many of the rural areas across our nation. But so those two senators weren't supportive of her in part because their constituents they don't envision school choice. They don't see why it's relevant to them. But I think what you'll see with the new Secretary of Education is that she will be pushing to provide choice in rural areas, especially through these very controversial online charter schools. And her husband has been a big investor in K-12 Incorporated, which is the largest operator of these virtual charter schools. And it's a very controversial company, in part because their results have been disastrous. And they've also been very heavily involved in lobbying and purchasing influence and policy arenas within states. So I don't know that he's still invested in K-12. She says that she doesn't have conflicts of interest, but we can't verify that.
The last time you were here, I believe we talked about online education, virtual schools. What is the problem with the basic idea that if you are in a remote area, and if you are someone who cannot easily get to the public school because there isn't one for several miles, or the one that's near you is not very good, what's the real problem with the idea that, hey, maybe an online education source could be better for you than what is offered in your immediate area?
Well, the problem with it is not the idea. The problem with it are the outcomes across the board. Universally, every outcome we look at is extremely negative. The children are losing ground. And many families are choosing this option, especially since at the urging of their youth who see the advertisements on Nickelodeon and elsewhere. It sounds exciting to be at home studying on your own. I happen to believe that the model could work, and I think it might be suitable for a smaller number of students during particular parts of their school career. But what's being peddled now and the model that's being pushed is a corporate model, and it's based on profit. And I think that's our problem with these schools right now is the outcomes. The idea is good, and I think it could provide a viable option. I believe in the future we're going to see more and more of the blended learning options that will reach these families so they don't have to be transported every day to a school at a great distance. But I think the big problem today is that everybody that is doing research in this area, we all agree that there's a serious problem and the outcomes are disastrous.
When Betsy DeVos was nominated for Secretary of Education, Bridge, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, ran a series of articles. Some of them were stories which they had done previously, which they then put back on the site. They quoted you in a story noting that the outcomes we can measure show it's leading to increased segregation. This is the growth of charter schools and increased burdens for districts. How do more charter schools lead to them being more segregated?
Now, back in 2010, we did a national study looking at what we called schools without diversity, and nationally looking at charter schools and how the populations, the demographics of the students compare with their surrounding districts. And we found that only a quarter of the nation's public charter schools had similar populations of students as their surrounding districts. And by similar, we mean within 10 percentage points in terms of the percent minority or white. And when we looked at special education and English language learners, we saw enormous differences, where we saw about four dozen charter schools in a nation that have very elevated numbers of children with special needs. Most of them have very few, and the children they serve tend to have very mild disabilities, where the children with moderate and severe disabilities are concentrated in public schools. So these charter schools are serving as, people would argue, the charter school establishment argues, they may be segregating, but it's not the charter school's fault. It's the parents are self-segregating. But charter schools are clearly providing a vehicle for accelerating segregation in our nation by race, by class, by ability, by special education status, and by language of instruction. And that's something that's been verified in a national study by the Civil Rights Project, and also in the state evaluations that we and others have conducted over the years. That's a consistent finding, is that charter schools accelerate segregation. And so I think I think the current administration is not going to be concerned about that. I think that's something that's quite acceptable in their mind. So I think we can see charter schools, the growth of charter schools, to increase, and what I would say, we have segregation already. What they will do is accelerate the segregation that exists.
Through policies which just encourage the growth of charter schools?
Yeah, with the growth of charter schools, we'll see increasing segregation by those categories I mentioned. So, and that's, I mean, the two things that charter schools have been used as vehicles for, one is accelerating resegregation. The other is privatization, where we've seen that they have become a vehicle for privatization, where I know John Engler early on pushed for charter schools. I think he believed in the vouchers, but didn't pursue that, didn't agree with Betsy DeVos on that. But I think he has had a vision where charter schools could become private schools. In Michigan now, we have just over 90% of our schools are privately owned and operated, charter schools. So, and that's something across the nation we're seeing now. Close to half of the nation's public charter school students are now enrolled in privately operated charter schools. A good portion of them are nonprofit companies, but in Michigan, about 80% are for-profit companies. And we don't see a large difference between the nonprofit companies and the for-profit companies when we look at their contracts, the performance agreements, and also the management fees that they pay.
Do you think there's something that is fundamentally wrong from a public policy standpoint with allowing somebody to come in and run the school in a for-profit manner?
Oh, Gordon, back in 2002, we did a book. It's called What's Public About Charter Schools? And Chris Nelson and I, he was at Western at the time when we wrote this book. And it was kind of to talk and to share with other states the lessons from Michigan, where we were already pursuing a lot of privatization through charter schools. And the lessons being that, you know, we should look at oversight mechanisms. We should look at incentives to help ensure that charter schools pursue their public, you know, pursue the public good, the public interest, rather than serve private or corporate interest. And I think at the time we had a number of recommendations for legislation that could tip the balance in terms of the public-private good that the charter schools could serve, even if they are privately managed. We argued if you had the right incentives in place, or had the right oversight mechanisms in place, we could still ensure that these private operators would work for the public's best interest. I think looking back at that now, we were perhaps a little naive, not understanding how the policy formation process works in our country, where more money, like the DeVos money, can purchase influence rather than rational thinking or the notion that legislators can put in place rational ideas about oversight when they still have to fund their campaigns. They still are dependent on donors like the DeVos family. So what we've seen is many other states are following the path of Michigan now, with charter schools becoming predominantly private actors and serving private goods rather than serving the public's best interest or the public good.
And the real problem that you're spelling out there is that it's a for-profit institution without the strong accountability measures that you spelled out now 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's a private entity, but they also don't follow the policy intent. The charter schools were supposed to be small, locally run, innovative, highly accountable schools. They would be given greater autonomy. But this idea that was embedded in the policy and in the legislative intent, they're not pursuing that. They're pursuing other outcomes. They're pursuing outcomes that lead to greater segregation and privatization. Those are not part of the legislative intent. So when these private actors are pursuing private outcomes or private good, they're not fulfilling that the publicly established goal that they were supposed to have, although they are publicly funded, receiving all of their funds from public sources.
Gary Miron, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Gordon.
Gary Miron is a professor in Western Michigan University's Education, Leadership, Research, and Technology Department.